everyone, and welcome to the Incubator Podcast. I'm your co-host, Aaron Boyd.
And this is Sabir Saran. Today, we are excited to have Symmetry Systems on with us. We have Martijn Lodiris joining us. He is the VP of Solution Engineering from Symmetry Systems. Martijn, welcome to the show. We're excited to have you. If you wouldn't mind just giving us a little bit more background about yourself and the value proposition from Symmetry Systems and particularly DataGuard, and then we'll dive in.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much, gentlemen, for having me here today. So just a brief introduction of myself. My name is Martijn Lodiris, and yes, you did pronounce it very well. I'm the VP of Solution Engineering and Delivery here at Symmetry Systems. Prior to joining Symmetry Systems, I actually led IBM's consumer identity practice globally and take a wealth of identity knowledge here into this space of data security. What we have done within Symmetry Systems is we build an awesome product called DataGuard. And the reason for building DataGuard was the fact that if you look at the things that are happening in our cybersecurity domain today, is that there's different attack vectors that actually all have the same objective. So no matter if it's compromised credentials through a phishing attack, or if it's a supply chain risk, or it's a vendor where some of their credentials were compromised, all of these type of vector attacks have one objective, which is to get to the data. So the way that Symmetry has created DataGuard is to be able to really look at what's happening to the data, so we can provide security at the core of that data to be able to understand who had access to that data, what did they do with it at what given point in time, to be able to really safeguard data security for organizations.
Yeah, thank you for that. I'll say that you're tackling some pretty outdated data security axioms with your approach. A lot of folks are still focused on prevention or security at the perimeter, but Symmetry is really looking at anomalous data flow continuously throughout the organization, which lends itself to a lot of capabilities. I'd almost say, this is going to be, bear with me on this one. I'd almost say it's a little bit of security alchemy. We're taking data loss prevention, we're taking digital asset management, we're taking cloud infrastructure entitlement management. It's the best of all of those capabilities, and then some, especially from the continuous posture. I don't know if you agree with that, but that's one of the way I look at it. So can you walk us through a little bit on how DataGuard does this? Because it's a complex environment, especially with ephemeral access, with permissions that can be fleeting, with machine-to-machine access. Can you walk us through a little bit more of the nuances of DataGuard, and then we'll build on it?
Yeah, absolutely. So the first thing we wanted to do when developing DataGuard is we didn't want to introduce additional vendor risk, right? So the way that we wanted to provide our services would be that data actually does not leave the premise of our customers. So our model is a deploy in your cloud model. That means that the application actually is deployed within your cloud infrastructure or cloud organization, so that the data that we're collecting and generating actually stays fully under your control and doesn't leave your premise to be able to go outside of your boundaries. The model that we've also developed is suitable not only just for one type of cloud vendor. Actually, we've created it in a way that we support GCP, AWS, Azure, and even on-premise, to be able to work with data and to provide data security across all these different platforms. And the way we do that, to your point, Brandon, was the fact that we wanted to really see what's happening at the data layer to be able to provide security measures from that perspective. That means that we're providing security from the data out. And the way we do that is that we wanted to be able to answer simple questions that otherwise would be hard to answer. And an example of that would be, did Brandon copy PII data? It's a very simple question, right? But to be able to answer that question, we needed to come up with three different axes of functionality to be able to analyze and then give a result to that question. The first axis, to your point that you already raised, is we need some level of data classification to understand where, in this case of my question, where does PII reside in your organization? So we have created, as part of our functionality, the capability of classification, so a classifier. The second axis is about who has access to the data, right? So we look at the In the cloud domain, we're looking at cloud permissions, like to your point about SIEM, what are the entitlements that people have and permissions that they have, either through direct identities or roles or groups that they can assume, and actually look at also derived permissions with regards to how can they get to the data. The third angle, which is the most, I would say, complex to actually achieve, which is how does data actually flow? And that third angle is means that we need to really understand, based on data activity logs of the different data sets, how data is flowing through the organization or through your cloud environment, and look at every single operation that's being performed. So that simple question to say, did Brandon copy PII data, means did Brandon, which is an identity with permission, copy, which is the operation or how the data flows, and then PII data, which was the classification to the specific data store that we were looking at, right? So DataGuard has been able to bring home all these three different capabilities for organizations to utilize to not only have the ability to get insights into what how things are flowing in their organization, but also to be able to work with that to identify risk and then associate accordingly, put seatbelt around those risks to get alerted if there's behavior that they don't want to have.
Yeah.
Well, I'll take this one, actually. So Martijn, thank you for that. So you mentioned those three axioms that come together, effectively forming a visualization. And I believe your tool technology platform gives that visualization capability to users. Now, how is that data actually built off of? Because you are complementing existing tool sets and technologies that are being used by enterprises. Case in point, choose your SIEM of choice, etc. Can you go through a little bit of what's ingested, how is it ingested, and how is that picture formulated so folks can utilize that data? And is this also a proactive versus reactive visualization? So is it the ability to ask questions from that visualization or security picture, or can this also be reacted upon in real time type of situation? Sorry, that might be a little too much, but
I'll do my best to segment it into a couple of different pieces. So sure. The first thing that we're doing when we landed our clients is once the application has been installed and we go into a configuration phase, we basically configure read-only access rights into the organization of our clients. And these read-only access rights basically point to two directions. The first one is to the cloud orchestration layer to be able to really understand permissions, the identities, and how they're being provisioned within your organization. The second one actually goes to every single one of the account or project or subscription, depending on which cloud provider you're using, and looks at the different data stores that are there. And what we're doing is we're assuming a read-only role to look at the data activity logs to be able to really understand who is doing what. As you can imagine, for instance, if you're getting federated into your cloud environment, you assume a role and then you perform a function, right? Those are multiple steps where you lose a lot of information who's what actually doing what. And because we're not gaining our information from the cloud orchestration layer, but really go into those data activity logs, we can actually see who it was and what they were doing with the data to therefore provide accuracy with regards to the reporting that we do. Your second question was around left shift versus right shift in a sense of how is DataGuard being used by organizations. I would say that we're being used by different types of organizations, ranging from cloud operations, IAM teams, SecOp teams, in different stages of how they're using DataGuard. The first one is around identification, which I'm kind of following the NIST stages here, but the first one is around identification. So think about, for instance, you're a new CISO, you're coming into a new organization, and you just want to have a good snapshot of what do I have and where does my sensitive data sit, right? So that's the step number one, where organizations install DataGuard and really get an understanding of where sensitive data is, how many identities they have, how many roles, et cetera. The second step is then to identify risk, right? So how can I increase my data security posture to understand where risk is? This could be a combination of dormant identities with access to production data that is sensitive. This could be how data is flowing between your production or staging environment. It could be certain data stores that are publicly accessible, right? We're seeing all of this level of information and identifying risk. So that's the second pillar, which is visualization. The third pillar is where we support our organizations and clients with detection and response. Because we've now identified risk, we can put in place policies, which we call data firewall rules, where we can see and put, let's say, seatbelts around these risks to get alerted if they occur. So if the dormant user with access to production data all of a sudden becomes active again, we can make sure that you get alerted, and therefore the SOC team can see if this is legitimate or not. And then the last one is around what you mentioned, which is the data security posture management. Because we've identified risk, we can create a plan together with our clients to be able to start cleaning up dormancy, to be able to properly offboard, some vendors that usually have residual rights that because you've tried them for 2 years and they were offboarded, but they still have a role access as an example, right? So having access to all of this type of information, either from the source, which could be in the identity, or the destination, which could be the data store or the data object, we can then help our clients increase their data security posture, making sure no matter what path people take, the blast radius of a compromise gets smaller. And with blast radius, I mean the impact of a breach or anything like that, because we all know it, in this day and age, it almost becomes inevitable that something will happen, right? So increasing your data security posture will allow you to minimize your blast radius and do the maximum amount of control to make sure there's no data leakage or anything like that.
Yeah, and Martijn, if you could, and I think I have this accurately captured, you're using ML, you're using graph theory as part of the ways you can determine what anomalous behavior is, anomalous data flows. Are you able to look at signals that suggest that, hey, maybe Sabir should have, or maybe he did have access to something, or maybe he didn't have access to a piece of data that now he's gained access to, and does it pop because, hey, I know about Sabir, I know what groups he's part of, I know what he should and shouldn't be looking at based on maybe some of the triadic closures and relationships in his peer group. And now I'm seeing that Sabir is, for some reason, accessing a piece of data that he just maybe shouldn't have. Is that the kind of behavior that gets flagged and that pops and that can be sent off to a SIM or some other alerting mechanism? And how far can you take some of those behavioral patterns?
Yeah, no, great question as well. Let me start off by saying, just like we all went through, for instance, this COVID phase, right, where we all got our vaccines, I would encourage every organization to think about doing a purple team exercise, not only because of the vulnerabilities that might come to light, but actually to train your organization on how to respond if something like this would occur, right? And one of the things that we've done in one of our clients' purple team exercise, to your point, is actually look at behavioral patterns of their employees with regards to how they're using, accessing data, how they're working with different data stores. And based on that pattern, we could also see anomalous behavior. For instance, one of the, let's say, purple team perpetrators was assuming what had compromised the credentials of a person, assuming a different role that he normally doesn't assume, and try to access a data store that he normally doesn't access, right? And that allowed us to start flagging these type of behavioral analysis. And this will, in case of an emergency that you really have a breach or an incident, it will shorten your time to intervene and to be able to stop a bad actor once they've gained access, just by looking at those behavioral patterns and being able to get alerted if those occur.
So let me ask another question then. So how easy is it to start getting data? I've seen some of the graphs that have come out of it, and some of them, quite frankly, are daunting. I imagine there's a whole spectrum of reactions when people see some of the data represented. And there's multi-dimensional ways of representing that data that I've seen from your platform. But one, how easy is it to get to that data? How long does it take to build that graph? And does it matter, or rather, is there almost a, hey, we can only go back 10 days, 30 days, 90 days, or does it really depend on how much data I'm able to expose to you that you can create that kind of visibility?
Yeah, no, again, really great question to be able to understand operational impact, right? Because when we land at a certain moment in time that either was triggered through an event, right? That something happened and you want to help with the forensics or proactively, but you still want to have some of that history. The good news is that when we land at our client space, as long as they've turned on data activity logging for their databases, we can go back as long as those are in existence, because we will use those log files to be able to start mapping out the graph that you were mentioning, where we look at permissions, derived permissions, and how people are operating with the different data stores. So basically the answer is, as long as the data activity logs are available, we can go back in time. The second question was, how long does it take for us to really populate the graph? The graph actually gets generated based on the available data at the time. So as you can imagine, pulling in the log files just takes a little while. So it could be a couple hours before the graph actually starts taking shape. And the accuracy increases, of course, as the couple of hours moves forward. From an installation effort, we need about half an hour maximum to get installed and about half an hour with the customer with the right credentials to get configured. So basically within an hour, you should be up and running. And then as the data logs become available to DataGuard, we're starting to actually already build out that graph model with those data stores, the access, the derived access, and to be able to model that out. And especially in large organizations where you're talking about millions of operations, like, I don't know, a last organization I just looked at, 25 million operations just in the last 3 months alone, with, you know, millions of data objects, that just takes a little bit of time to be able to get them going. But usually we would be within 24 hours, we have a really good accurate picture to be able to start doing what we call insights reports. So we generate a report for our clients to be able to understand, like, this is some of the potential risks that we're seeing. And these are some of the things that we would like to discuss with you, because as you may or may not know, when we land at a customer's environment, every environment is different. And it's for us almost like a jigsaw puzzle every single time when we land. Why did they set it up this way? Why did they use this many roles? Or why did they do this many identities, right? So it's always a consultation with the client for us to say, hey, we are seeing this pattern. Is this an intended pattern? And can we help lower this blast radius at, for instance, certain roles?
Yeah, it's got to create. And by the way, we're asking like multi-part questions. The fact that you can pick out question one, two, three, four, bravo to you. My memory isn't that great. But what you're saying is interesting. You expose so much data from misconfigurations to least privilege to dormant privilege to zombie identities. So much data can be exposed. And like you said, you can create through consultation a prioritization. But I imagine this also gets really interesting from a go-to-market, because of what you're exposing and because you have decided to focus on a company's most valuable asset, which is its data, and because you can detect anomalous behaviors and patterns with that data, you're now in privacy assessments. You're in exposure assessments. You get front row seat to why did you provision the way you did? So who do you find is the most typical person that you engage with, or what group in the organization is the most typical that you would engage with to start something? Is it when somebody does an audit? Is it, hey, I don't know what's going on and I need my arms around something first? Or is it something a little more point specific by maybe a product team or a platform engineering team? What is the typical road to purchase?
Yeah, so I think... if I'm generalizing, let's call it a sales motion here, I think our first point of contact usually is the CISO because of the security responsibilities that they hold. And they're very interested in, of course, protecting their crown jewels and looking at data security through that lens, right? To your earlier point, there's a lot of perimeter activities that are happening, right, with your Zscalers and your IAM solutions, et cetera. But really understanding even your insider threat type motions is something that a CISO is very interested about. So usually that's like step one, is that we have an initial conversation there. And then they, of course, want to see it in action. And we have an ability to do what we call a free data risk map with our clients, that, or a proof of value, you can call it that way as well. But basically to get it installed for a short period in time and just get a snapshot of where potential risk could be, right? This means that we then would engage with, for instance, an IAM team that's interested in understanding their dormant identities. The interesting thing there is that the IAM team wants to do that proof of value, but then needs the cloud ops team to help them install, right? So now the cloud ops team is involved and they're saying, hey, this is interesting. We can now see, to your point, any failed operations, or we can see, you know, certain egregious things that our developers are doing. So they get excited. So now we're having a CISO and CIO, a CISO, the IAM team, and a cloud ops team joining. And then once they see the results, the SecOp team comes there, and now it becomes this whole group of people that get value out of what we're doing. So most of the time, the economic buyer then still sits at the CISO level, but we have a lot of interested parties that, to your point, derive value out of some of the data that we're extracting out of the organization.
Yeah, that's what I love about it. It's a rising tide conversation. There's a lot of folks that get to benefit. It must be interesting because sometimes people get a little alligator arms when it comes time to paying for the bill, but a lot of people benefit from it. So that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Well, there is a reason why Gartner has called you guys the cool vendor for 2022 because of all the value proposition that spans multiple parts of the organization. So just building on that, so there's one particular CISO I have in mind that has posed a different type of question around this. And I think that whole aspect of posture management and identity and access, all that comes into play here in terms of entitlements. So his challenge is from a DLP standpoint and understanding what are the assets out there, how are they classified. And so, you know, logically, this seems to fit right into a DLP conversation. Are those use cases as well, Martijn, that you can expand on how Symmetry Systems DataGuard can play into the overall DLP equation as well? Because I don't think it's a one-size-fits-all solution, and there's various parts of it, but would love your take on that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. We do have some of our entry points being DLP conversations because a lot of times the organization is looking at classification, where sensitive data exists, and trying to tag that or trying to ensure that data resilience is there or disaster recovery is there. The way we would enter that conversation around DLP, it's only one of those access that we provide, right? It's only one of the thing that we do. And it's not necessarily that we are the best DLP tool out there, but what we're doing is we can work with customers to classify the specific patterns or file types that they're using. And what we can then do, for instance, one of our clients is a genomics company, and they've showed us how a DNA string looks like, right? So we can look for those patterns and recognize them and mark them as sensitive. For us, data security is the forefront of what we want to provide, right? So cloud data security is what we're looking for. So if we're looking at classification, okay, this is sensitive, and then combine that with the identity that, for instance, has over-permissioning, right? And he's doing egregious operations like delete object or anything like that, or has star permissions, right? That's the toxic combinations or the vulnerable combinations that we are looking for to be able to drive value to our customers. Having said that, we have a lot of our clients that have DLP tools and actually uses on top of that as a complementary tool, because as we are looking at operations, we also see failed operations. So think about, for instance, the DR process that all of a sudden failed. Right. Or think about you have a rogue employee and he is actually deleting or removing data stores, right, that are crucial to your organization. Those are some of the things that we can see and help the organization avoid or step into to mitigate to be able to drive value.
Thanks. And just for further clarification, now DataGuard wouldn't be classified as a CASB solution, but I see the elements that you just described in terms of classification and association with account entitlements, thereby allowing organizations to make a potential decision, or where might be the demarcation point?
I would say that a lot of, so a couple of things are totally different than the way we've approached this, right? So the first thing is a lot of these tools that you're mentioning, either SIEM tools or DLP tools, they actually take data out of your organization to be able to be analyzed or to be classified. And we wanted to ensure that no data leaves your organization and therefore not introduce an additional vendor risk. The second thing that is different is that most of these type of SIEM tools or DLP tools or even CASB tools, they rely on the orchestration layer of the cloud vendor to be able to get to the control plane and use that level of information to be able to understand what's going on. And unfortunately, at that level, there's already a lot of information that is lost or is scrubbed or is not existent. And that's why we took the decision really to be at the source of the data, which is the data activity logs, to be able to, from that point of view, derive accuracy and precision when it comes down to who has access, what did they do, and what given time point in time.
Awesome.
Yeah. Now, the other thing I like and recognized was, one, you're expressing the data. And again, through that insights report, we can prioritize and we can tackle this as a group. And then the visualization is just are really cool to watch. But then, and then we also talked about, look, you can also, you've got a firewall, and as you trigger, you can send that to a SIEM, you can send that to SOAR, and now you can take actions on some of those things. We've seen that you've got IAM policy recommendations. So as you capture misconfigured or permissions that aren't considered least privilege, you can make these suggestions, which is really great. I can feed that back into whatever my IAC tool is of choice. And then I think you're going further. I think you're eventually going to get to a point where you can at least allow humans to delete, to revoke, to take some sort of action. Is that something you're okay to expand on a little bit? Because there is a natural progression. We see where you're heading. We love it. There's so much that goes into it. And if it's worthwhile, or if you're able to, if you can talk about some of that, it'd be wonderful.
Yeah, absolutely. So basically what you just mentioned is kind of like the life cycle of the value that we're bringing, right? So identification of your resources and what you have is step one. Visualization of your risk is step two. The challenge with the visualization of the risk and to actually be able to mitigate is that not everything is an easy fix, right? We all know that. So if we need to refactor roles, as an example, because, they're over-permissioned, that could take some time, especially when there's applications involved that assume those roles to be able to execute business processes. So one of the things that we've done with these data firewall rules is basically putting alerts in place to just make sure that you get alerted on egregious behavior. Right? Just like I just mentioned, somebody's assuming a role he's never assumed before would be something that you want to be alerted on. And we also call those seatbelts, right? So until those seatbelts, at least the seatbelts will give you some temporary relief until you've been able to start mitigating your risks. So on the mitigation of risk, we do have within the product the ability to have policy recommendations that you can immediately apply to AWS with regards to reduction of permissions, as an example. The other thing that we're doing right now is outside of the standard data guard platform, which we deliberately wanted to have read-only to make sure that there's no vendor risk in your organization as we collect all this information, we've created an additional module that we call Data Guard Enforce. And Data Guard Enforce is there for a human to be able to then take the outcomes, to be able to say, okay, for instance, I have a list of dormant users. Let's take that list and just go through them to say, okay, these needs to be suspended. This one needs to be deleted. This one needs a reduction into permissions for a person to take those type of decisions. Because unfortunately, if there would have been an automated form of, for instance, access revoke or permission revoke or anything like that, and we don't know necessarily if it's a business process intent, it's Black Friday, like abnormal behavior is happening, you don't want to stop the business, right? So we believe that you need some level of human intervention to make those type of calls as well.
Yeah, I think that's a huge reality. There's the fastest way out of an account is to disrupt the biggest day of the year. So this is I just have kind of a, I'll call it a fun question. So I was looking at Kaysen, I was looking at Mohit, I was looking at their history, large research history, University of Texas, huge academic prowess. Normally, I would get a chance to do a little more research into maybe some of their academic pursuits, papers, et cetera. I didn't get a chance to this time. But is there anything you can share with respect to some of those founding members? Where are they really interested? Where are they focusing next? Academics are always so fun to speak to because they think differently. What can you share about where Kaysen and Mohit are maybe spending some of their time or some of their academic cycles?
Yeah, so both Mohit and Kaysen originated working together at UT Austin. And they both worked at Spark Labs, where some of the really tough problems are being addressed. And what they were focusing on is exactly what we're trying to achieve here in the commercial space, right? Is how can I protect data objects at the core, right? If you think about it, we've focused already for decades on identity protection, right? We've got MFA in place, we've got behavioral analytics in place, we've got biometrics in place, all of the things to be able to safeguard our identity. But at the same time, from a data perspective, there's still a lot to be gained with regards to how do you segment data, how can you provide access credentials in the right way, and how can you actually see what's happening with the data accordingly. I think one of the largest accomplishments that they're bringing to the table here at Symmetry is to be able to provide this data security at scale. I already mentioned that, you know, especially in the F500 accounts that we are in, we are talking about AWS, GCP, or Azure environments that really are in the hundreds of thousands of dollars a month that they're consuming, right? And that means hundreds of AWS accounts or hundreds of projects they're using. To be able to still have DataGuard perform at that scale and, let's say, not choke with all these operations that you need to analyze or all the data that you need to classify, I think is absolutely a contribution to their academic history and to be able to put the core in place that allows us to execute today. As where they're going next, I think you need to ask that then.
All right, that's a follow-up. That's the next podcast right there. No, this is a non-trivial thing that you've done. And just to underscore, looking at data, the data as an asset, and doing a data security posture management is just absolutely different than some of those, like I said, those outdated data security axioms. So this is a phenomenally different approach that I think everybody should be looking at. So unless you have any other questions.
No, we're good. I was, I think we'll have to ask the founder some of the next questions on the next podcast, but yeah.
Yeah, but Martijn, we really appreciate you spending time with us. We love what you're bringing to the market with DataGuard and look forward to seeing what Enforce looks like as well. But we appreciate your spending the time, and then we'll be following up soon. If anybody has any questions, by the way, please reach out to Symmetry Systems. You can always ping Sabir and myself. We're more than happy to jump on a call and just kind of give it to you straight. And that I think that's a wrap.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Martijn.
Thank you, gentlemen. It was a pleasure being here.